Good morning. Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy. Ailish Forfar.
Good morning.
JD Bunkus. Vic behind the glass.
It's a strange song.
It's a great color on him. Isn't it?
Yeah, nobody can see it.
No one can see.
Asking you. I'm trying to give Vic a compliment.
That's green. Yeah. He looks good.
Whatever. Thanks, guys. Thanks for playing off me trying to compliment someone who helps us out a lot.
Nah.
Jeez. Someone who we help out a lot.
Oh.
A real Kipper and Bourne, noted plagiarist and non-text message answerer.
Wow.
Justin Bourne. How are you this morning, man?
What an intro, eh?
I like that.
I wonder if those things are connected. Jeez. Yeah.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you guys today?
We're all right. JD and Ailish are good. I'm out here trying to pay compliments and stuff and getting sandbagged. So the Leafs lost 2 over the weekend. We were talking early in the show about which loss we feel better about. And that's a weird framing, but against the Minnesota Wild, they come back from this poor start. They force overtime. They steal a point. A lot of good fight back from a gameplay standpoint. And then against Winnipeg, it's a lot of fight back from a more literal standpoint. How do you feel about those two losses? And did you come away encouraged with kind of the toughness and the makeup of this group from either of them?
Yeah, I absolutely did. And it's not just the physical aspect of that and the fighting and all that, but just they just don't seem to give away points easily. And that is not something previous versions of the Toronto Maple Leafs could claim. You know, like that Winnipeg game was a textbook schedule loss, right? You know, they're on the road in a back-to-back against a rested team at home. Teams in that situation this year are like, you know, 400 winning percentage type of thing. The Leafs struggle there just like everyone else. And they go down big. It could have just been a walk, a sleeper, a complete nothing game. But you know, kind of, they keep playing more than they used to, and they, you know, they get a couple of goals, and all of a sudden you're going into the third period and it's just a 2-goal game and it's the Leafs and you got the feisty stuff. And you know, that really to me felt like a game that previous versions of the Leafs let go into a 7-1 night. Well, you know, we didn't get them today, we'll get them next time type of thing. I like that there's consistent push and there's guys in the lineup who provide that. And yeah, no, I felt okay about a 6-3 loss.
So obviously, there's the reaction late, and there's, you know, the Matthews matching penalty that's a little bit weird. There's the no call on the Sandin knee, and then the Spezza hit that, you know, could be, we were talking to Elliot Friedman earlier, could be headed to supplemental discipline potentially, although the Leafs will argue against that. Do you think that's a good, I know the discourse around officiating in the Leafs has been, well, it's going to get weirder in the playoffs, and the whistle always changes a little bit, and you got to be ready for that. Is this an element of a tune-up in preparation for that?
Yeah, I think so. You know, this team has lacked a little bit of that playoff-style hockey. And I don't know, maybe it was a coincidence having Kyle Clifford in the lineup last night. Like, it made them feel like they've got more punch left in them, mm-hmm. than they really do. But I don't know, I thought it was a really good look for this team. That, you know what else I thought was a good look? That when things kind of, a pushback was required, that Sheldon Keefe offered it, that he put on the ice in a situation last night, Clifford, Simmons, and Richie, and just said, you know, I can feel that my bench is angry and wants to get at these guys, and I'm going to be a part of that. And I enjoyed that from Sheldon Keefe last night.
Buddy, you know I loved it, right?
I know it.
You know, and you know it because I sent you, I don't know how many text messages about how much I love it. So there's just, I truly believe. And this is why I kind of want you and Ailish to both weigh in on this, because, you know, I have not played, so no offense to Team UConn, I'm sorry to all of you there, I've not played in meaningful hockey games, you know, like with a team over the course of an entire season, and had these moments where, you know, things can get dull and things can get different. And I'm so glad that you brought up the, like, because I've been trying to quantify the toughness and the things that are different about this team, because I start to self-doubt, especially as a Leaf fan, right? Because you start to believe in something and then you have to whip yourself and be like, hey, it's really not like that. And you're being stupid and you're being tricked again. And it's don't feel secure about any of this. But last night and over the weekend, that's what I've been trying to figure out is, if you look at it on paper, right? On paper, it's, hey, who fought? Well, Wayne Simmons. Well, he's done that before. And Jason Spezza was getting in the mix and he's been an emotional leader. Okay, well, he's done that before and he's done it in the playoffs. okay, Kyle Clifford fought. Like, well, that's what he's there for, right? If you look at the characters who are involved in, like, the actual tough, rough and tumble things, it's the people that you expect it to be. But when it comes to, like, the overall toughness of the team, it is this sort of, we don't go away. There aren't so many bad shifts. The power play is clicking. When we look at this in terms of team toughness and the value of sort of these losing games like this over a course of long season, I wonder how, like, you and Ailish actually quantify this. Like, whether someone like myself, who's not a part of it, overstates it just because he likes to see it, or whether there actually is this real value in all of this.
Well, I think there's one thing that you could probably relate to, and this is 100% a guess, but have you been in a large fight with a bunch of buddies at any point? Like,
yes, and in hockey too. This is going to this is not going to surprise you, but old Team UConn, we had some tough games against, you know, teams from BC and Alberta and Alaska, where the score would maybe resemble something. I wasn't always the goalie in these games, or it would be like 13-1, and so things could get ugly.
Yeah, so I have one particular memory in junior where in Vernon, where I played junior, the hallway connected behind the benches, and we had one of those games that just got nasty, and, you know, everyone fills into the hallways behind the benches to get at each other. There's like a building of people, you know, 4,000 people staring at an empty ice and empty benches, and we're having a WWE brawl for all in the hallway. A literal metal dividing gate at one point was thrown over the top. One of their guys got dragged into our side, and God knows if he lived. Like, it was nasty, and we all got to that dressing room, and I don't think I've ever felt adrenaline like that. Like, there's like a bond with the team that, like, you know, you kind of been through some things together, and I do feel that going into the next day and the next game, like, there's this galvanizing effect that, okay, like, we're a we. You know, it's not just a bunch of guys. Like, we, you know, you form something as a group, and, you know, maybe that's overstating what happened last night, but there's definitely an element of value for a team in what happens last night. Mm-hmm.
I can't speak too much on the fighting, since in girls' hockey it's a little bit more bickering.
No, but I think be just physical hockey where you're, like, slashing people or doing anything. But just even when Bourne brings up the thing about a brawl, like, I have friends who I'm not even that close with anymore, but we will forever be connected by being in brawls together. And it's like the number one thing that you bring up over the first beer. And I just don't know if that's like a, because that's obviously a real life thing that doesn't happen as often. But when you're playing 82 games or however many that you guys were even playing, if that actually has like a lasting effect, if it is the same way, that is the number one story that you sort of lean on to connect with someone.
I think there's something to be said about just like the camaraderie or the unity that builds, that you have each other's back, and, you know, you can get through those tougher games, whether that's in the playoffs or the regular season, and just show a little bit of extra fight. And that's the biggest thing I took away from this weekend, is like, they had the grit, they had the guts to kind of push back, and as Justin was saying earlier, that might not have been the case before. They might have said, okay, this game's out of reach, like, you know, let's just wrap this up.
Yeah, I gotta say though, can Austin Matthews just punch a guy in the damn mouth? Like, you're a giant. You're a huge guy. You don't have to be, you know, the Ben Chiarot laughing and this thing with Dubois. Like, I promise you, the Toronto Maple Leafs will kill a 5-minute penalty if he cross-checks someone in the mouth, and they want him to.
So,
like, something.
Yeah, can I? I'm actually going to pull up a text that I wrote to a buddy. I said, so,
by the way, I heard Blake's eyes roll at me when I said that.
No. Here's the thing, though. Actually, Blake was the number one person that kind of sort of like started to push these takes this morning. And okay, so I'm texting with a buddy last night who's also a huge Leafs fan, and we're writing about guys and the fights, and like we were both texting back and forth, like, when's Clifford gonna go? And then he does, and so we go, and I wrote him, now Richie, and then he's like, oh yeah, blah 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 blah. I wrote, only issue. A lot of teams have good players who will also engage in this stuff. And Matthews, JT, Nylander, and Marner, never going to lead that way. And I said, Simmons, Clifford, Spezza, they can't set that tone all the time. And so it was something that I was sort of reluctant to bring up on air, because I feel like people are going to take it as, what, you want Matthews to fight? What, you want Marner to fight? It's like, no. But I also do think about how it's like, there is an energy to that. There is a tone that's set to that whole idea of like the group being together and the group doing the thing. And yet it's like your most important players are not really involved in that. And Matthews, the only reason that he was like fully reluctant, you know, like fully getting mugged to get involved in that type of a play. And I do wonder if when things get tough and the tough gets going, if not having that element among your best players, if that's actually the thing that ends up costing you, or not so much costing you, but if we should read into as much the toughness and the different things and blah, 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 when it's the guys that are down the lineup that ultimately are only supposed to be playing like, you know, 12 minutes in playoff games.
Yeah, you know, it's the very thing that I've mentioned many times on these airwaves that, like, I don't believe you can really import toughness around your core, because at the end of the day in playoffs, the guys who play 20-plus minutes, if they're not tough players, how much different is your team going to be? Like, you're not going to be throwing over Wayne Simmonds and, you know, a Nick Ritchie line with Kyle Clifford in the playoffs. So, you know, I do look around the league and think that some of the best players have to have this little bit of an element. You know, Sidney Crosby, obviously, greasy. Yeah. He will, you know, go to the war with you in the corners.
Ovi
does it. He'll get into it. I mean, God, Connor McDavid's running people from behind out there. But, I mean, in all seriousness, he does protect himself and get a little bit more involved. So I know it sounds terrible, but, you know, that same junior coach I had once told me, like, you know, I was a good offensive player and not particularly tough. And he was like, the next run someone takes at you, go ahead and cross-check him in the teeth. And I promise you, we will be happy trying to kill that penalty for you. And it won't happen as much to you. I wouldn't mind seeing Matthews do something like that.
So these things tend to happen, maybe not to that aggressive a degree, but accidents happen and injuries come from practice as well. Mitch Marner didn't play at the two games on the weekend. We don't really know what happened. And I can't imagine you know specifics beyond what we all saw. But the Marner-Muzzin thing and the kind of blow-up that hit social media coming from that, where Marner was clearly ticked off, how often does something like that happen in practice and just not get out? Like, is that a pretty regular occurrence, or is that something that we should kind of, you know, eyeball a little bit more?
No, it's a regular occurrence. Okay. What I love about it is, you know, someone like myself, not to make everything about me today, but lots of anecdotes. You know, I, not a particularly tough guy when I played, but pretty good offensively. And I hated in practice when, you know, we had these like tough D-men who would be laying the lumber in front of the net in a drill and cross-checking me in the lower back. And it's like, guy, like, we're teammates. I'm out there trying to score goals. And I would get pissed off in practice. And I got in a number of fights in practice, not because, you know, anything particular happened, just because, what are we doing here? We're teammates. Like, you don't need to blow me up. I don't know what happened to Marner exactly, but, like, I get the frustration. On the other hand, I have grown up enough to recognize that people like myself needed that, and it was good for me to have to recognize that practice wasn't just an excuse to, you know, float around and have my fun out there, and you need some guys to elevate the level. So, you know, I can see it from both sides on the Marner and Muzzin thing. I didn't see exactly what happened, but this sort of stuff happens, you know, once a week in practice with some random pair of guys.
I just think it's funny that this is the same thing with the same two guys. Right? Like, wasn't it Muzzin early in the year?
Was it Simmonds that hit him early
in
the year?
Oh, no, it was Simmonds. Yeah, I remember when so I was about to go on your show, actually, and I did the whole, I always do this, because I woke up from a nap and I just Googled Leafs to make sure that I always do it to make sure that nothing has happened that's massive, right? I don't want to come on your show and you guys are like, so Mitch Marner was
trading. Big trade, and you're like, oh.
So I Googled Leafs and I saw the story and I just thought that it was an old one because it had already happened. And then I realized, like, I had to double check and then ended up actually reading the story that it did. So when we're talking about toughness with the top end group, though, right? And like, hey, you can't import it. You can't do certain things. And like, I do think that it is a topic of discussion. But I will say one thing, which is there was always this cliche of, well, the power play is their enforcer, right? The power play is the enforcer. And lately, like, it's true. They scored 5 goals this weekend on the power play without Mitch Marner. They've gone up all the way to 5th. Can we say it's fixed?
I feel like power play is as results-based as you can get. Like, you know, are they scoring goals? Great. You know, there are some underlying metrics where you look at shot attempts and whatever else you want to generate on the power play. But, yeah, all that stuff is good, too. So I think it is, by and large. What's crazy is, like, it doesn't feel all that fundamentally different than it did when it was totally unfixed, which is why so many people, myself included, were just like, it'll work itself out. You know, like, we have these great players, they'll figure it out. You know, it certainly looks like they have it figured out now. Matthews is obviously zipping it, you know, getting passes through that seam, which I think teams took away from them last season. So, yeah, it looks really good right now. My complaint, as always, as you know, JD, is just I'd like Morgan Riley to move the puck a little quicker and never shoot it. But, you know, otherwise they're obviously looking really good.
So we had Elliot on a little bit earlier, and we were asking about Hall. And there's been a very disappointing couple games slash the whole season where he hasn't done too much. But we asked about if he would have maybe been a trade candidate or a moving piece. And his answer was probably, but now that Sandin could potentially be injured, that might not be the case. So wondering your reaction to something like that, and if you thought that if Sandin maybe didn't get hurt last night, and we obviously don't know the outcome of that yet, if Hall might have been a piece moving forward to get rid of.
Yeah, I mean, Hall and Dermott, like, I thought one of them was going to get traded this week, essentially. Mm-hmm. Just looking at, you know, Peter Mrazek's eventual return, the salary cap situation was tight, and I'm sure Elliot talked to you guys about that, but, like, there was a point where if you sent down four of the guys they had up, they still didn't have room for Peter Mrazek. Yep. Like, someone was going to have to go. What sucks worse right now, though, is with Sandin going down, he's on such a cheap deal that, yep, like, it doesn't save you that, yeah, problem, and you still have to do something. I will say, it always seems stupid to me that they had 7 D-man, and they were like, we have a surplus, we should trade someone. It's like, what?
No.
Have you watched hockey or seen the playoffs? So I still think something has to happen here, but I don't know what, now that they only have 6 really good D-man.
Dude, this is the thing that I don't really understand what the move is, because the team looks good, right? And we all acknowledge that they're a better team and blah, 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 blah. And you go down the line and they lose Sandin. Obviously, that's a massive blow. But you never really wanted to trade away from your depth on the blue line for this exact reason. And yet it feels like they have to do it. They don't really have prospects that are coming up to supplement this high-paid talent in the first place. And so it's one thing to say, hey, the Leafs should trade for somebody and they should use long-term assets. But also you go, well, eventually you're going to need a Nick Robertson contract or a Rodion Amarov contract to work on this team. You can't just keep going to the well over and over and over. And it seems like a small difference, but it is a real difference for this team when we're looking at guys they have to pay, you know, the $1.5, $2 million Richies down the lineup versus guys who you're calling up on rookie deals that are being paid under $1 million. So they're just in a tough spot. You don't want to take away from the forward group. There's no meaningful player there other than maybe you would want to move Richie. But again, it's like, who's taking that on and how much are you actually saving on this? And then we do the Mrazek thing where you go, well, could they do the Kiprios idea, which is rehabilitate him and then get a cheaper goalie? But Elliot pointed it out. That's one, a really hard thing to do. And two, you really can't downgrade that much because you saw what Joe Wall looks like in a tough game, right? where they actually put some shots on him, and he's going to let in 5 goals. So that's the story of the season. Is it's not so much about, hey, well, do they have the tough enough blue line? And is the market, because those things don't get answered in the playoff time. It's like, how do they get there? How do they get there with the cap picture the way that it is, with the assets that they have available to them, and just the sort of inflexibility they have as a group to add to them?
It's wild. Like, looking around the NHL and looking at the best teams, there's just, I feel like expansion, one more team of expansion was the final blow that, like, weakened every roster. And at the same time, the salary cap staying flat for, well, this is the second season in the row, has made everything inflexible. So it's like everyone has roster holes and no one can fix them. And the Leafs are no different. You know, just looking at their situation right now, it's, I don't know is the answer. I don't know how you patch these holes. You know, the Richie thing to me, it's like, yeah, you know, who takes him on? It's like, I don't know, but would someone who's not trying to win, like Arizona, or I don't know. It just, you look at all the efficiency of the contracts, and that's something we, you know, unfortunately guys get judged at more than ever. And like, what does Richie do? Like, even in that game last night, they put him out
there. You gotta fight, man.
You gotta fight, and I hate saying that, but like, do something. What are you providing? You got no goals on the season. They're putting you out in a situation like that. Like, I just, what would you say you do here, JD? How about that?
No, I know. It's just, like I said, it's tough because you end up trading Richie, and what are you getting back? Like,
cap space.
Yeah, sure. Let's say you are, but if I'm just a team out there, I'm thinking, well, why wouldn't I trade for Jake DeBrusk? You know, like there's already a player that plays big and who's physical and comes around a similar cap number, who I think is better. Mm-hmm. And I can
go. You're trying to win if you're trading for DeBrusque. You're trading for Richie. You're going. It's not the. Not
yeah. The so I just like again, they're in a really tough cap spot, and it didn't really dawn on me how bad it was until the Sandin injury happened, for the reasons that you just said, where I went, boy, they get no relief from this. Like, they're losing a super important piece, but he's far more important to them. Not because, like, this was not inevitable, but possible, right? Remember Babcock brought this up when Sandin was first called up? Like, hey, his body isn't quite there yet where we trust him to hold up for an entire season. It's a dirty knee on knee that ends up happening. Like, it's a flukish play. It's one that probably hurts just about anybody, but it was one of those, oh, yeah, well, you know, you got to be prepared to lose somebody, especially a younger player who might not be physically ready for 82 games. But, man, just you can't replace him for $1 million. You can't even come close. He's 1% of your salary cap, and now you have to try to replicate that. Who's the Leafs' seventh defenseman now? Honestly, like, who is it?
Duzak?
I have no idea. I follow this team extremely closely.
Rubens.
I have no idea. But here's what I'll tell you. That's, I don't want to see any of them ever play.
Latvian boy.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to ever see them play. So, speaking of value over contract, this will be the last one to let you go. Bunting, 10 points in his last 7 games. And last night just fits in seamlessly into just this, like, dirty, ratty game. Involved all night. Doesn't go anywhere. I don't even know how to set this up in terms of, I actually have a take that I'm sitting on that I want to wait a little longer for more of an accumulation. But in a year of Dubas doling out great contracts, with the Kasha discussions and the Kampf discussions and blah, 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 this is the best one.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Who's his agent? How does he get him a second year at that number? Like, the guy showed plenty the year before. I can't believe the Leafs get him for another year at 900.
Insane.
It almost feels like certain he won't be here after that. So it's like, you got to cash in while you have him. But yeah, he is sorely what the Leafs were lacking, which, you know, and I hate to say personality, but there is this element of, like, you know, Kadri had it when he was here, and I guess it's rattiness, but just like chatting at the other team and his mouth and being in those areas. And he's a lot of fun to watch. He's fit in up and down the lineup. You couldn't be more right. He feels like a major win. He's the type of player, too, Leafs fans love. So a quick favorite here.
Okay, we'll let you go on a nicer note, right?
Oh, yeah, like a more complimentary note?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dustin Bourne, nice guy.
Tall.
Former big-time collegiate hockey player. ECHL
Had he just cross-checked
Alaska
a few
Aces.
More people in the mouth, maybe it'd be different, but here we
great
are.
Great Christmas tree.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah.
You buddy. Feel better?
Yeah. I do.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks, guys.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You know what I love about the chattiness with him, too? Mm-hmm. Not Bourne. That's great. Like, his chattiness gets him paid money. That's obvious. But with Bunting is, I really think that with all those alphas that play professional hockey, you know, it's just like huge, strong guys that in their day-to-day lives even, imagine, you know, how difficult it is for someone. You've got this little part in your caveman brain where someone Bunting size, like, yapping at you and slashing at you. He's like, why don't I just kill this guy? You know, like, in caveman times, I'm smoking this dude, and then it's like head to rock, and, you know, we don't even bury the bodies because we're cavemen. They just leave them there for the, I don't know, whatever creatures are out here.
Hyenas.
Yeah, sure. So I think that there's something extra to the way he makes people see red because he is a smaller guy, and that's why it works for the Marchands, and it's always worked for the smaller players, is that the bigger guy who's out there that you're goading and that you're slashing and that you're taking bumps from is just eventually going to lose his mind and go into caveman mode, and that's how you end up drawing all those penalties. That's how you add that value. And so I do think that there's an even extra bonus to being yappy that way and to drawing that kind of stuff. And if you just look at the history of the Rats, it's a very, very good component to have. And you heard it last night where he's yelling at that official where he's getting held in the boards. And they played it twice.
It was so
good. So
loud, too.
Yeah, both. You heard Ferraro where he was like, hey, this is why the ref probably came up and said, only say that when you're closer to me because that gets picked up on the broadcast. But anyway, I've been unbelievably impressed with Bunting. At the beginning of the year, we were obviously super high on him. Mm-hmm. Then there was a little bit of a leveling when he went down the lineup. We said, hey, you know, comparing this guy to Hyman was a little bit too much. And now we're sort of back to doing that.
And like part of it was like, part of the discussion of moving him around the lineup, though, was like he can fit a couple different places, and that's a skill in itself. And obviously the question mark with him coming into this year was, okay, well, he has this tiny sample of success with this monstrous shooting percentage.
Yeah.
What does he look like when that normalizes?
Yeah.
Maybe he's not a 13% like true shooting percentage guy, but that's where he's at right now. He's played exactly as many games this year as he had played in his career before this season.
Yeah.
It looks like we have 52 games now saying he's at least an above average finisher.
Yep.
Within his role, sure. But I think it's pretty encouraging.
You know what's weird about this team is that, and Blake, at some point, honestly, we're going to actually need you to really dumb it down for us in terms of what the Leafs need from a salary cap standpoint here. Like maybe this is
tomorrow if you want.
Yeah, that's a tomorrow show thing because
Mikheyev, even like something like Mikheyev costing a little more than Joey Anderson is
close. Like Mikheyev back in here.
He traveled for these two games.
Oh, that's good. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so nice. I think he's, but I don't know, like with their cap situation, I would assume they'll send Mikheyev on a conditioning stint to the Marlies, both because he's been out, but it also kind of delays that decision a little bit, but we can get into that more tomorrow.
Yeah, and I do want you to look at that. But if you look at the Leafs right now, Blake does her homework.
He's so excited.
If you look at the Leafs right now, and I know some of you will always say they couldn't have seen the pandemic coming, so blah, blah, blah. Dubas has done this incredible job of filling out the roster this year. Look at the value contracts that they have. Bunting, 900 grand.
Mm-hmm.
Kasha, Kampf. Hell, you have to bring up Jack Campbell. Jack Campbell is, Kipper, when I was on with him the other day, said if we had quarter season awards, he'd be in the running for MVP, not just Vezina. And
Engvall's another one. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not throwing him into the best contracts.
1.25?
No, I just mean, in terms of those four guys specifically, when I think about some of the better contracts actually around hockey, those are there, right? Bunting has 10 points in his last seven games.
Yeah.
And he's making less than $1 million and you've got him on another deal. And yet the Leafs are still so cap crunched that when they bring up their backup goaltender or bring in a third line forward who's making 1.6, they have to trade a defenseman. They have to trade somebody. And it really does speak to, as good as this thing is, that is one of the real difficulties of the Matthews, Marner, Tavares, Nylander, that it's not just about their play. There are ripple effects with the roster that go beyond just finding those contracts. It's like you also have to find the other $1 million guy, the next less than $1 million guy, and have depth, all that comes in at that number. It's just really hard.
Yeah, and I mean, you see it. Sandin and Liljegren both make less than $1 million, and now one of them's hurt, and you're scraping for not only the cap space, but like, is there a 7th D you trust on a cheap deal? Like,
no.
Duzak and Rubens are probably the options.
Duzak
was...
Point of game.
Duzak. That was that. Try. So we're going to take a break on that note?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the break time?
Yeah, I think that means it's time for a break. Look at some elite prospects pages.
Yeah. Yours?
No, not mine.
Yeah, Ayla's showing off her elite prospects page to everybody on YouTube over the weekend.
Oh, I was just typing in elite prospects to look something up. It went to my page. I don't know what happened.
My home screen.
Hey, you know what though? Seriously, as we take the break, HockeyDB, put women's college stats on your site.
Yeah, we were just looking between the break and they don't have that, but yet they have men's.
They put men's college stats onto HockeyDB. Why are you not putting women's college stats on HockeyDB? This isn't supposed to be some type of, but come on. Why would that even be? You shouldn't look up Ailish and not see her hockey stats. She played at a Div 1 school. All right? How's about that? Let's take a break.
Yeah, HockeyDB, we're coming for you.
And let's talk to another collegiate athlete. That's right. It's Justin Dunk. 3 Down Nation, CFL insider. What happens to the Argos now? What now? What comes next? It's the Fan Morning Show. JD Bunkus, Ailish 4-4, Blake Murphy. Sports F5, not a fan. I love how the CFL doesn't use the bye week before the Grey Cup, like the NFL, the Super Bowl. It's just
they don't
like,
need
hey,
that. They're tough.
Don't kill your own momentum.
Yeah, they're like, hey, we're playing it right away.
Just don't go to a Raptors game on the couple days before your Grey Cup.
Playoff tickets are always hot in the GTA, but this Ticats ticket in Hamilton, that is a hot ticket. I'll tell
you. So if anyone's listening, we're interested in going, so help us out. Thank you, producers and such.
So I have gone to a couple Grey Cups, and I have gone to some division finals. And when they're at BMO, they were not that difficult to get. They were not that pricey, and my friends.
Yeah, the one I went to, it was just like
they were like, "Here you go,
here, go for free."
This is not that one. I'm grinding out here, and that's why we have our next guest on. Is to get us tickets? No, it's Justin Doug, CFL Insider, Three Down Nation, one of the best. How you doing, buddy? Been a while.
Doing well. If you guys want in, man, I got some ways at Tim Hortons Field. I know the city.
Okay. Right.
Okay, well then, good.
Hit us
so
up.
Then, Dunk.
We'll talk about it off there, okay?
Yeah,
okay.
I like that. I like
thank
that.
Thank you, Dunk. That's good stuff. Okay, so was that a win for the CFL this weekend? Like, is this something that they would have wanted? Because I was kind of thinking about, okay, you've got a really excited city of Hamilton that's been preparing for this for a long time. Now you get the hometown team that's in it, but also coming into the year, it was reported by a few people that the Argos future is tenuous in this league. This is a league that was really, really struggling financially. Like, where are we at just in terms of the success of the weekend and the greater look at the CFL as a whole from it?
The weekend was certainly a success because we had some entertaining games. And in large part, the CFL season, the regular season, had been boring. I'm sure you guys would agree. But the league is still in financial trouble. We haven't heard from Randy Ambrosi in months. And I know our outlet, specifically Three Down Nation, we've asked for him a bunch of times on a bunch of different topics and haven't heard from him. So the state of the league on Friday is going to be really interesting. And as far as the Argos go, you guys saw the attendance number there. It was just over 16,000. They were hyping this up, saying this was going to be the biggest crowd there since they moved to BMO. It wasn't even close, and it was mostly Ticats fans. So the Argos most certainly are still an issue.
Yeah, see, that's what I was worried about. I was kind of hoping, because the game was so great, and it was just fun, and you could tell that there was a ton of Ticats fans in attendance. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it was super loud for the Ticats. But I also thought, hey, that's actually the kind of thing that if you're someone in Toronto watching your one Argos game a year actually makes you want to go down to a game, right? You get reminded that, oh, that's really nice to have the rivalry between those two cities. Like, it's a fun game. Mm-hmm. I've been to many of those games. It is really, really fun. Unless you're me, the one time I wore my Ticats stuff to an Argos game and sat in the end zone and didn't realize that that was, like, for all the hardcore fans, and I was getting glitter thrown in my face point blank by Argos fans.
Yeah. Probably a good look
that,
for you, though.
That was not a good time. That is not what I read. As I'm getting more and more triggered, and my girlfriend's like, don't be mad. And I'm like, I'm not mad at all. Like,
I'm picturing you in the bathroom looking at it and like, being mad at first and then being like,
no,
pulling it off?
No, it's
you're like, I like this glitter look.
It was actually the worst. Like, I got in a huge fight with my ex after the game, and it was all because I was just like, I think the Argos won like a million to nothing, and I just ate it the whole game. We stayed for the entire time. Either way, it's a fun rivalry to be a part of. It was a fun game to watch. It was this great game, and for this moment, I was just kind of enjoying the CFL for what the CFL is, and then the game ended, and the Argos were out, and I see the fighting stuff, and it just felt so Bush League afterwards, and I went, man, it was all Ticats fans, and now I'm looking at this thinking, how many more times are we going to get that game?
Yeah, that's a major question mark. Bro, you're lucky you weren't getting batteries and full beer cans thrown at you. The glitter,
I got one beer thrown.
Hey, man. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I got one beer. I got one beer thrown at me.
Thanks.
Yeah, I know. I was like pretty shocked. I was like, yeah.
I'm going to bring this up on the radio in 2 years.
But let's bring it to that. So do you think that losing that game in any way actually affects the Argos' future? Like, had they been going to a Grey Cup, because we always say, oh, winning matters, and yet they won the 100th Grey Cup and it didn't really change anything. So did that actually have any stakes in terms of what it meant to the future of that franchise?
I don't think it did at all. You mentioned it. They won the 100th Grey Cup. That didn't move the lead needle or boost attendance at all. They won in 2017, which was an upset victory. That didn't boost it. So I don't think that outcome mattered for their future.
I can't wait to hear and see the atmosphere, hopefully, in real life this weekend in Hamilton. How big of a opportunity is that for them to have the Grey Cup on home field with their team, the Arkells at halftime? Like, what an atmosphere are you kind of expecting there?
you can already sense the buzz in the city, right? Mm. So I anchor sports down there at CHCTV, and honestly, people have been talking about it all year. They just assumed the Ticats were going to be in it, like your fair weather fan, right? But they didn't understand actually they had to win the games on the field. So the city's alive. The game sold out last night, and there was literally people that I know there that were purchasing their tickets for like $400.
Yeah, so, I'm on Ticketmaster right now, and the cheapest ticket, standing room only, is over $350.
There you go. That's one part of the end zone. It would be fun, but I mean, for people to shell that out, it's largely going to be the Ticats fans that have been waiting for this for over 20 years. Just to host a Grey Cup, let alone the team being in it. I don't think they've been in one in Hamilton since like the 1970s.
Where are your underdogs?
What?
They're underdogs.
Yeah.
Oh.
You're saying like you're paying all that money for a game where you're not favored.
That's okay. It's even more exciting if they win.
Yeah.
So, Justin, this is technically, I guess, a Grey Cup rematch, even though we lost the season in between. Do you sense like a little bit of a rivalry here too? I know it's fairly rare to have the back-to-back matchup here. And then obviously, you know, the fight fan in us, if the Tiger Cats are victorious on Sunday, we're going to want the rubber match to settle it for all. Or does the kind of the lost season and just the East versus West not really allow for that much of a rivalry aspect here?
No, there's a rivalry aspect, and I'll go right to the heart of it. Zach Kolaros was traded out of Hamilton, and one of the people involved in that was the now, I guess, CEO. They're calling him Scott Mitchell. So there's some hard feelings there, whether either of those guys want to admit it on the record or not. And then you go on down the list. There's some bad blood from that Grey Cup because of Brandon Banks spouting off after the loss, right? He was frustrated, got injured in that game. He's a guy that's been known to open his mouth a little bit, which is honestly entertaining for us. So there's certainly some mixed feelings there, and there's unfinished business, of course, the cliche on the Ticats side. So this rivalry is alive, let me tell you.
So back to the Argos for a minute. What's the question about the Argos to Ambrosi?
Ooh. If he was given truth serum, I'd want to ask him how much money per year do the Argos lose, and how critical or how front-facing, that's not the right word, but you know, how much at the front of the XL file conversation were the Argos and MLSE pushing that along? That would be the one that I would love to hear, but he'll dance around.
Okay, but you are one of the most prominent insiders with this sport, and I am curious just about your read on what the future looks like for the Argos in this league in general.
You know, it's real tricky, and some people say, well, could the league survive without the Argos in it, or if they moved elsewhere? And I really do think that the league could continue on. You know, there's been some talk, especially out west, that they could run the Western Canadian Football League, just put a W in front of it and keep the logo going. So, you know, it's really going to be intriguing to see, because there are people involved in MLSE, and of course, one of them, the top guy, Larry Tannenbaum, that want to bring an NFL team to Toronto. They're not going to say it publicly, but it's something they want to do, right? We had the report, I believe it was earlier this year, that the Rogers Centre was going to be demolished, and then speculation was running rampant behind the scenes to the people I was talking to, saying it would be perfect to put a football field beside it, just like you have in so many of the U.S. cities that have NFL teams. So there's intrigue there, and in the NFL, if the NFL did come, you'd have to move the Argos somewhere else, and I don't necessarily think it would affect the future of the CFL, but if there was an NFL team here, it would be sexy and it would be totally different and attended, kind of like the Raptors and the Blue Jays and the Leafs and all that.
Oh, yeah. No, NFL coming. Listen, this is a high event city. I've said it before and I'll say it again. It's a sports town in the sense of people get behind their professional sports teams, but it's not a sports town in the sense of everything underneath it gets any attention. Like, there's a reason why junior hockey doesn't really work here. There's a reason why you can just easily get a ticket to an AHL game that's in the easiest spot ever and a fun arena to watch, that oftentimes has big-time prospects that are coming up to play for the Leafs. Like, people don't really support the thing that isn't the number one billing. And it's like, yeah, that's why. Had the Argos been in a Grey Cup, I think people would have gone. I think people would have been interested in that. They would have gone and decided to be a part of a party. They would have wanted to be a part of an event. But the Argos haven't been sexy in the city for a long time. And, yeah, I don't know. If a game like last night doesn't really change anything in that regard, I don't know what will. And an NFL's team certainly doesn't help. You always do, though. You always help. And you will help us with our tickets off air.
That's right. Apparently.
Yeah, we're going to the game. Yay, Dunk. Yay! Got us tickets. Yay, thank you,
we're
Dunk.
Going.
Thank you, Dunker. Justin Dunk, CFL Insider, 3 Down Nation, and all-around good guy. Thanks for making time this morning, buddy.
Yeah, appreciate y'all.
See you, buddy.
We're going to the game.
I don't love the CFL in the sense of I'm some diehard fan that watches every week. And there's just too much. And honestly, a lot of our job is having conversations that sports fans are having. And in this city, no one really has conversations about the CFL or the Argos, right? Mm-hmm. Think about it. They almost missed their quarterback was out for the entire week of preparation. There was a huge story.
That was so wild.
It was, but it doesn't register that much. I didn't even ask Justin a question about whether it affected the game because I don't think people really care.
Yeah.
I don't. And it sucks because I will tell you, it's going to be the worst if the Argos leave or fold or do whatever. And then you end up getting all the people who are going to be, oh, I'm so sad. Oh, I'm going to miss the Battle of Ontario. Oh, I'm so blah, 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 after not supporting it forever. And this is what I have to say about just like all these sports leagues that have a tougher time continuing, whether it's the CWHL when it was here,
rest in peace,
but rest in peace, because it's like, hey, if all the people on social media that were so big fans would have just gone down to the odd game, then guess what wouldn't have gone away? That. And so it's just a lot of posturing and a lot of people on social media that claim they like something, that claim they support something. It's really not that hard to go to an Argos game. And honestly, if we lose it, it's a huge loss for the city because it is a massively, massively, massively underrated event here. And every time I go to the Argos, every single time, I always think, why isn't this more popular?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't more people go to this? This is a high-level product. You get to go actually have a bit of a tailgate experience now. It's much better than it used to be. And it's a cheap ticket. Too cool. Too cool for the Argos.
Too cool for the Argos.
And now if we lose it,
everyone will be like, oh.
Yeah, I know.
It was so great. How can we lost it?
They'll be like Ailish wearing their vintage Argos stuff.
I do have a vintage Argos.
Of course you do. That's something.
Sure. I bought it when I was going to one of my first Argos games. I went specifically to a vintage store and was like, do you have any cool Argos stuff? And came out with a little number.
Couple cool Argos things.
Couple cool Argos things.
Also, I'm super stoked for the city of Hamilton. Like they had
so sick.
If you go to Hamilton and you've already seen obviously the way that they've advertised for this thing for a long time, and to have it, it was always a possibility. I mean, of course, it's a small league with not a lot of teams, but it was always a really realistic possibility that the Ticats were going to be there this year.
It doesn't always work out that nicely, though. This is chef's kiss.
To come back and to beat the Argos that way, your rival.
So cool.
And to get to this Grey Cup.
1972, the last time they played in one that they hosted.
Yeah, that's cool.
What about the league in general?
I think they haven't won since 99.
In general, Saskatchewan, I know in 2013... one at home.
Yeah. This is cool though because it's a bit of a tortured franchise. Mm-hmm. They haven't won since 99. Yeah. The year that I met Joe Montford.
That is the last time someone played one at home. 2013 at Saskatchewan one.
Okay.
I was actually talking to a friend yesterday about it and how cool an experience it was, like a non CFL fan who was like, "Oh, I got to go to that one and like it was one of the best sporting experiences."
It is.
Which I bet.
The Grey Cup is such a good time.
I haven't done a Grey Cup yet. I've done a few CFL games scattered around. I did I've done playoff games. I did the West Final when I lived out in Vancouver.
Ooh, cool.
But I haven't done the Grey Cup.
Grey Cup is one of the best parties that you can go to. Week long, all kinds of different people from all kinds of different provinces come in.
That was the coolest thing to the Grey Cup that I went to.
Yeah.
The two teams playing in it, which are the Red Blacks, and you were at that one too, I forget. Yep. But there's players are fans from all over the country that just came because they're like, I love it. I want to be at the Grey Cup and I want to support my team even if they're not in it. And like, that's not something you see all the time.
It's a big time event. It's an incredible party and the product is good. And it will make me so sad to lose it, even if it's something that I also don't pay enough attention to. But again,
will you throw some juice on it just so you have
100%?
Will I throw some juice on it?
I don't know. First of all, it's not a thing where like,
no,
I don't think you're watching all the games.
No,
and stuff,
I'm desperately trying to go to the game, and then the rule applies. You go to the hometown team, and you bet big on the hometown team.
Yeah.
So,
and,
yes.
And you got to go, like, I know they're 3.5-point dogs, but you got to go money line,
of course,
too. You're not going to root for them lose narrowly.
No, it'll be a huge money line bet on the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Tabbies, baby. Oski Weeby, let's go.
We're going to get some props on our Kells and Lumineers on Friday.
And Kate Flay, right? Some.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a show. You should that's probably why the tickets are so high. Get
listen,
free
I've
quality
seen Shania,
artists.
So no offense to the Arkells, but
actually
who cares?
It's just Arkells, not
sorry,
the.
Sorry, cool guys.
It's because Blake's corrected me on that before, oh, that I think he? About it every time that I'm about to say that name.
Those guys also own a bar in Hamilton, so they're pretty
called
stoked.
Odds Bar.
Yeah, they're pretty stoked. Every bar in Hamilton right now is thank you, thank you, thank you. And they deserve it because the pandemic's been hard and it's hard to run a bar. So,
The Flyers just fired their head coach.
Okay.
Cool. A lot of moves.
Wow.
Canucks fired their head coach and GM too.
Per Frank Cervelli.
So...
let's go. Shake it all up, baby.
The Leafs have lost two in a row. Dubas and Keefe next?
No, don't even start with those rumblings.
Probably. So I don't have any take on the Flyers.
No. The Canucks thing's overdue.
The Canucks nice thing Canucks is just, fans. There's got to be overhauls.
I thought if they were just getting rid of their coach, that wasn't a great move. But it sounds like they're hopefully getting rid of their GM.
But had the Canucks not moved so quickly, maybe they could have had a reunion with Vigneault.
Yep.
Had to do... Oh, too quick.
Well,
it's also
quick.
Just a little weird of, like, if you're letting your GM go, who is making the decision about installing him? That new head coach? Mm-hmm. As much as we like him, and that's great for Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
But so Leafs are off tonight. Mm-hmm. The Raptors are off tonight.
Mm-hmm.
9:05 play in an hour. But we got Pats at Bills. I'm glad that the schedule has worked out.
It laid up perfectly for this evening.
Yeah. It's there have been some stinkers on primetime football this year, but you have hockey and basketball to switch over. This feels like a straight football night.
I tell you, I actually feel as though it's going to be a classic and the Bills win, or a rout and the Patriots win.
And it's off at halftime.
Yeah. It's just one of those games where we're going. They go into the tunnel, and the Bills are getting booed, and it's Josh Allen's got the helmet in his hands kind of thing, grabbing the fan. He's doing the jog off, and they're like, two interceptions for Allen, and the Patriots are running the ball.
And I don't like this.
That's just the vibe I have on this one.
I'll tell you, if that happens, really good NBA slate tonight. So, not to immediately Bills pivot from, no, I'm Bills. Only watching football to, yeah. Oh, well, there's lots of NBA games to switch to, but there's lots of NBA games to switch to.
It's a massive, massive, massive legacy game for Josh Allen. It's not important for anyone more than him. If there's a secondary narrative, it's probably McVay, because he probably gets scrutinized if they get killed in this game, and Belichick, you know, body bags him, and we feel like, boy, there's a real discrepancy between these two head coaches. But yeah, I think if Belichick wins this, he's like fast track to coach of the year. And I think if the Bills win, we're looking at it going, hey, they are who we thought they were, and that's one of the elite teams in the NFL, that they were the favorites for the Super Bowl for a reason. Let's see it tonight. This is it. This is what people have been waiting for, Bills, is a really meaningful win from you against a huge opponent.
Biggest Bills game until Let's the next go! Biggest Bills game, exactly, which is next Sunday, weeks. And then the next biggest Bills game, which is Boxing Day.
Big show. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.
Go, Bills.
She said it. It's the Fan Morning Show, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy, J.D. Bunkus. Subscribe to the podcast. We'll see you tomorrow.